award-winning chef Dan Barber, author of The Third Plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food. And at 11 on Health Watch, the guest is Dr. Jeffrey Bland, a leader in the functional medicine movement, which seeks to pinpoint and prevent the cause of illness rather than treat its symptoms. And at 11:30 on Madness Radio, Erica Vander Acker discusses her innovative counseling work with violent offenders in the Netherlands. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And you are tuned, KBOO Portland.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series. June 7th at 7 p.m. will show Meet the Falkins. Louise and Martine Falkins are identical twins. For over 50 years, they were working as prostitutes. They freed themselves from the control of their pimps, ran their own brothel, and set up the first informal trade union for prostitutes. Meet the Falkins is a portrait of these women. Again, that's June 7th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Monday, June 2nd, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm on the web. We have a lot of topics to get to today, as always, I suppose. This is something that has just come in, however. The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press has alerted us when we called them for a completely different reason this morning, that James Rice and the Supreme Court has made a decision not to hear an appeal by the New York Times reporter James Rice. And don't have time to go into the background on this, but if that name doesn't ring all the bells and light up all the red lights on the board, then take a look. It should. The court's decision, the inaction, is obviously going to lead to, we do intend to lead to a robust federal shield law, and hopefully serve as a catalyst in the news media's continued efforts with the Department of Justice to craft strict limited guidelines for federal subpoenas of reporters. This is a fairly big issue for anyone in the news. And you know what? Even if you don't report news or gather news or investigate things, it affects your lives as well. It affects all of our lives, because this is about what we hear and what we don't hear, and the no man's land where those two areas meet. We have our guest this morning. Stephen Zunis is going to be joining us once again. Many listeners to the show are familiar with Stephen Zunis. He is a professor at UC San Francisco in the politics department, and there has been there are interesting twists and turns in the crisis, the unfolding aggression in Crimea and Ukraine. What we hear about, of course, in mainstream media is violence, because violence sells more cookies on TV. So of course we want to hear. People want to hear more about that, but there's a great deal more going on beneath the surface, and it is probably of far greater long-term significance than the hysterical braying that we are, for the most part, exposed to. So I'm very pleased to welcome Stephen back to the KBOO airwaves to talk about this. Good morning.
Nice to be with you again.
Well, we're really glad to have you back. This is a many people are just plain old confused. This is a part of the
definitely. It's the more recent developments, of course, has been the various armed groups have seized buildings in a number of cities in eastern Ukraine, and well, many people in Ukraine, particularly the ethnic Russian population, were concerned about some of the groups that seized power in the country a few months ago. They're not very happy about these armed Russian gangs, apparently backed by Moscow, that have been throwing their weight around. And the Ukrainian government has used military force in some cases to attack people, including some civilians have been killed, and it's led to greater polarization. But a couple positive developments have happened. You know, one is they finally did have elections in which the far right only got 2% of the vote. They were the scary part because they played a role in the ouster of Yushchenko earlier. The guy who won, while on one hand he's yet another oligarch, is somewhat more moderate and is trying to bridge the gap between the extremes. But most importantly is that the civil society, ordinary people, are rising to the occasion. For example, in Mariupol, the one of the largest cities under the control of these Russian gangs, there was an attempted military attack that killed a half dozen people a couple weeks ago by the Ukraine. So it was unsuccessful. But then tens of thousands of steel workers, ordinary working class Ukrainians, marched into downtown and basically forced the armed gangs out of there. And similarly, we've had other nonviolent movements within the population, both ethnic Ukrainians and ethnic Russians together, saying, "Look, we don't want these armed groups. We don't want to be pawns in a new Cold War. We don't like the Ukrainian chauvinists or the Russian chauvinists. We would like a democratic Ukraine and a unified Ukraine." And and I think this is really important because you do have hardliners on both sides. You have people in both Washington and Moscow who are trying to feed their militaristic paradigm, but here we have Ukrainian civil society rising to the occasion. Meanwhile, in Crimea, which was annexed by Moscow, you've had similar nonviolent resistance, particularly among the Muslim Tatar population. And so polls have shown that only a minority of Crimeans and even a smaller minority of those in eastern Ukraine want to be part of Russia. And while they may have some legitimate grievances about the central government in Kiev, there's clearly a desire to let the people be in charge and to reject the militarism and extremism from both sides.
And this part of the world too, it's worth pointing out, has always been a powder keg. It's to Western eyes, it seems remote and a bit hazy, but it has been frequently the trigger for a great many other world events. I know you have just a couple more minutes, where people could find out more, because the thing about peaceful nonviolence that makes it such a threat to disaster capitalists is that if it's peaceful nonviolence, more people are likely to be out in the streets. If it's violent, people are afraid. They stay barricaded in their homes and their flats. But if it's a peaceful nonviolent action and they see their friends and their neighbors and their families out there, they'll join. And the numbers are going to surge. So
exactly. And there's a clear correlation between the level of democracy and the success of if we're looking at a broad-based population, and that armed struggle is usually young, able-bodied males that have access to guns, whereas
yes.
Nonviolent resistance can include everybody. And it's not just the state, and again, it's not just armed groups, it's ordinary people. And that's what we've seen around the world. The biggest factor that has led to a growing democracy and pluralism, as well as challenges to global excesses of global capitalism and the like, has been people power. And that's and it's something that's often overlooked in the mainstream media. So and it's great to see that even the place as confusing and messy as Ukraine, where there are not a lot of good guys, that we do see people power coming to the fore.
Stephen, thank you so much for that. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. My guest has been Stephen Zunis. He's a professor in the Department of Politics at UC San Francisco, joining us once again. Thanks again for that, Stephen. Moving right along, we've got a few headlines. There's a piece that I found. I'm going to put it up on the KBOO website. It is interesting. Just simply, I want to... of course, emphasize only from a casual observer and one who likes to take a look at move cultural currents and as they sweep around and through our lives. This is a piece on why one might want to destroy a surveillance camera. It goes into a great deal of detail. Considering the closed circuit TV cameras that are everywhere as instruments of social control, the production of discipline, the production of anti-participatory conformity, and the certainty of rapid deployment of observed deviance in the compilation of individualized dossiers of this monitored population. Don't think that the cameras just take a look at everybody. They are very sophisticated devices now, and they do not fall equally on all users of the street, but on those who are stereotypical, predefined as potentially deviant, through appearance and demeanor, are singled out by operators as unrespectable. In this way, youth, particularly those already socially and economically marginalized, may be subject to even greater levels of authoritative intervention. Got a lot of good reasons for doing this in the that one might want to ponder from purely, of course, philosophical perspective, right? Moving through briefly, we've got a couple of minutes left. Last Thursday, U.S. District Judge Anna Brown dismissed civil claims from Jonas Fieke, former Portland resident. Fieke reported that he was tortured in the United Arab Emirates at the behest of the feds and put on the U.S. government's no-fly list. This formalizes statements Brown made during a March hearing. But it gives Jonas Fieke until June 27th to rewrite his complaint, which names the FBI, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, and others. Fieke is a Muslim who lived in Portland before going overseas on business. Today, the Environmental Protection Agency, moving right along, I should add, today the Environmental Protection Agency plans to surprise no one with a too little, too late plan. Regarding carbon emissions, the Republican proposal to address the greatest crisis humankind has ever faced. Here's the Republican solution to catastrophic climate change is, of course, Benghazi, Barack Obama's EPA plan. And it's to cut carbon dioxide emissions from power plants by 30% by 2030. That's presuming that the world looks exactly the same in 2030 as it does now, and it has not already been utterly and completely ravaged by complete climate collapse. We have no idea whether we'll eat the jet stream will even be operational. We don't know what will be going on with the currents in the ocean that sustain life on the planet. When those currents in the ocean, in the global ocean, shut down, there goes life on planet Earth. The only real news here is that the action is the first to set national limits on the chief gas linked to global warming, with a rule which is expected to be final next year. See how this is moving, right? Moving with unerring swiftness. It's a centerpiece of Obama's plans to reduce pollution. More on that, which we'll post on the website. And the Initiative Campaign for Open Nonpartisan Primaries in Oregon has collected $120,000 in the past 3 weeks. State campaign finance and disclosures show that the money indicates that supporters are serious about qualifying the initiative for the November ballot. And there's the Utah oil spills under the water supply of the Colorado River, raising grave questions about impacts to the water supply of Las Vegas. Wait, what? You mean there's still water in the Colorado River? It comes as a huge surprise to many people. We are flat out of time. This has been our Cascadia for Monday, June 2nd, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, with a keynote speaker on June 6th and all-day conference June 7th at Portland State University. Voices on the Ground is hosted by the Social Welfare Action Alliance and the School of Social Work at PSU, with the goal of providing space for the larger community of activists and organizations to connect and engage students and the broader community in an effort to build meaningful, collaborative relationships. Again, that's Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.